coronavirus. The UK apparently is finally at its peak of the outbreak, according to the Health Secretary Matt Hancock. He updated MPs on this as the number of UK hospital deaths from the virus rose to above 18,000. Hancock thanked the British public for their steadfast commitment in following lockdown rules and added it's making a difference, but revealed social distancing measures would not be relaxed or changed until the government's five tests for exiting the lockdown were reached. Dr. Kit Cates is senior lecturer in mathematical biology at the University of Bath and the author of The Maths of Life and Death. Kit, afternoon to you.
Hi, Ian. How are you doing?
Very well. Good to have you with us. I said at the outset of this, this is almost about maths as it is about science and medicine. And that appears to have been borne out over the last few weeks. We watched those press conferences almost with a mathematical mind as distinct from anything else.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a strange and amazing time to be a mathematician because...
I bet it is, yeah. Who'd have thought it?
Exactly. Our subject has suddenly been elevated to the forefront of everyone's mind. I think as mathematicians, we've been telling people for a while that math is important. It underlies all sorts of important things in society, from the way that we build bridges, the way that we build and test planes, to the way that we enjoy the cinema, for example. Computer-generated imaging is all about mathematics, but this is really now maths right up in people's face and trying to understand how this disease is going to progress and the impact of the lockdown is going to have. Those are all questions that we can try to answer with mathematics.
Yeah, I was going to say, we look at the headline figure, and for those of us who aren't neither a mathematician or a clinician, you just see a number, of course, it's a daunting figure, 18,000, and of course the projections are that it will get even worse. In fact, many suggesting it already is even worse than that.
Sure.
Is that a misplaced analysis to look just at that number?
I think, yeah, just looking at this single number of deaths without the context of how it's changing over time, what we would call the derivative, how quickly things are changing, is sort of misplaced. But even knowing those daily death figures as they come in is not even the whole picture. So actually, those daily death figures that are reported every day, they contain deaths not necessarily that have happened on that day, but may have happened up to a week and sometimes even a month before. And so actually, what's more useful to look at is data that NHS England has been releasing every day, which is actually deaths by day of death rather than by day of reporting. And actually, in that data, you can start to see a much more clear trend. And actually, it shows that the number of deaths actually per day peaked around the 8th of April. So since then, it's been coming down. Now, again, that data is not complete because, as I mentioned, there's this lag in the reporting. So actually, for the last week, we haven't got complete figures of people who have died on a particular day. But okay. The 8th of April is nearly 2 weeks away now, 2 weeks ago. And so actually, we're fairly confident that figure is not going to change too much.
So when we see that daily figure and it looks as if it's always going up or thereabouts, I mean, there's been times when at the beginning of this week, we thought we saw or begin to see a sort of visual pattern of, oh, there seems to be fewer people today and fewer the next day. I think one day it was down to about 400 and something, and then 2 days later, back up again. How do we ascertain then from that it looks like a rise, but actually it could be a plateauing or even a fall?
Yeah, so looking at those daily figures is a little bit worrying, just because actually there's a lag even in the reporting over the weekend. So you see usually on a Monday and a Tuesday, you see smaller numbers of deaths being announced because not all the deaths from the weekend are filtering through. And then you see a spike on the Wednesday and the Thursday often, or the Tuesday and the Wednesday sometimes, because we're sort of catching up with the effect of the weekend. So those daily figures are not to be believed in terms of looking at a two-day trend and thinking now things are down, or the fact that we've just spiked up again. Actually, you need to, what we would call, do a rolling average, so average over a number of days to figure out what's happening. And actually, the figures that are actually collated by date of death are much more accurate, and you can really start to see the trend that the deaths seem to have peaked back almost a couple of weeks ago now, which suggests that cases peaked even before that, maybe early April or late March. So it does show that what we're doing is having an effect. We're over the so-called peak, but it's really important to be aware that this is not the same peak that was originally talked about when we were talking about flattening the curve. That was about letting everyone potentially get the disease and then having the cases come down because people were immune. Really, this is an artificial peak that we've induced by putting in these measures like lockdown, like social distancing, to make sure that we don't spread the disease too rapidly or too fast. So cases are coming down, but there's no reason to take your foot off the gas, if you like, because as soon as we go back to normal, then things will just take off again. People will start to get infected again, and cases will grow exponentially again.
And that is the problem, isn't it, for those who are charged with trying to sort this thing out, this sort of key concept of the R-naught thing.
Yeah.
The R-naught thing, I don't think is the correct terminology, but you take my point. But the sort of the basic reproduction number, as it
exactly.
were.
Exactly.
I mean, you can play around with that and probably get it down to kind of zero, but I mean, that would mean an unappealing lockdown, a more intense lockdown, but then of course you've got to at some point release that lockdown, and therefore that R-naught number increases.
Right, exactly. So this R-naught, this basic reproduction number, or reproduction number now that we're in the progression of the disease that you're talking about, is the number of cases that each infected individual will pass the disease onto. So if it's bigger than one, then cases will grow, and if it's less than one, then cases will decline. And we're hopefully, the evidence is suggesting we've brought that well below one, so cases are starting to die out. And ideally, what we'll do is get to a situation where we have R very, very low indeed, and there are very few cases. New cases per day. Then the question is, what do we do? How do we get out of this lockdown? And there's no one clear answer to that. Some people have suggested, well, we let everyone go back to normal, but then as soon as we hit some trigger point in terms of the number of ICU beds that are occupied or the number of cases per day, then we have to reinforce a very vigorous lockdown, so a sort of on-off binary strategy. Other people are suggesting, which it seems to be more tolerable idea, that we maybe enforce some of this social distancing for a long period of time. This is what Chris Whitty has been saying. But also that we follow up cases that we find very aggressively. We test a lot of people. As soon as someone's tested, they're isolated, and then we also follow up their contacts. This is called contact tracing. We isolate them, we test them, and we make sure that there aren't cases in the community. We basically stamp on any new fire that starts to come out in this dry field that we effectively are. We're trying to really try to keep things under control as much as possible. That will be the aim, but there's no one great strategy that's going to make everyone happy, and we're in it for the long term.
I think the answer to that, you wouldn't want to be Boris Johnson. I think that's the headline, isn't it, of all of this, because ultimately that's the man that's going to make this decision.
I think that's right. I think at the bottom of the pile, they have to listen to what the scientists are saying and then interpret that in terms of policy. And those are really, really difficult decisions. You've got to base it on the best scientific evidence you have. But yeah, I wouldn't like to be making those decisions.
This must be much more interesting for a mathematician. When were you though at university studying Descartes and Archimedes and the like? Did you think that you'd be crunching numbers over a global pandemic?
Well, yeah, this is one of the things that we teach our undergraduates. I actually delivered a lecture today to my second year mathematical modelling students on how to model infectious diseases. This is part of the course. So it is something that we teach our undergraduates. It's like we tell them, it's really important piece of mathematics. It's not like we've just suddenly sprung into action on this. We've been trying to understand disease for a long time, and mathematicians have been influential in bringing loads of epidemics under control, like the Ebola outbreak between 2014 and 2016. Lots of mathematicians were getting OBEs for their great work in that. So yeah, we've been waiting for this moment, and we're doing our best to try and come up with strategies to combat.
Alan Turing was a mathematician, of course, wasn't he? So you know, you could look at all sorts of areas where it's played out in ways we don't expect. Maybe you could be there, and what would be quite nice is if people like yourself from a different perspective, Kit, were one of those asking the questions at the press conference when we see them on the big screens. We've been saying for weeks, you need people often from a perspective asking a question as distinct from just a journalist.
Yeah, that's right. I think you're absolutely right. That's why I'm trying to do a lot of this communication. I'm writing articles for The Conversation. And I guess my book, The Master of Life and Death, has a whole chapter called How to Stop a Pandemic. So, I'm really interested in this. And I'm really keen to try and communicate these ideas to make sure that people who are asking the question are better informed about what they should be asking of the government.
It would just be nice to see Dominic Raab, sort of the air bubble, saying, oh, God, not somebody who knows what they're talking about. That would be...
Right, no doubt he would refer to the other people.
Yes, of course he would. Yeah, yeah. Can I just pop that question to my friend on the left or the right? Kit, great to have you on, sir. Thank you,
yeah,
Dr. Kit Yates, senior lecturer in mathematical biology at the University of Bath and the author of Maths of Life and Death. I think that's utterly fascinating. If you can get yourself through all that is required to get yourself into a position in that world, I'd imagine this kind of area of study is absolutely fascinating. If this is your thing, it probably doesn't get any more seductive and interesting as where we are right now, curiously. 0344 499 1000. You're listening to Ian Collins on Talk Radio. We'll go to more of your